Hey everybody, January 6th is coming. What is the significance of this date? Is it really the day that we choose a next president of the United States? That and so much more. Brought to you by our friends at ExpressVPN, expressvpn.com. Protect your data from big tech and big government by getting your VPN at expressvpn.com/Charlie. Also, if you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. Get behind the work that we are doing to reach millions of young people across the country. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. January 6th, it's coming. What does it mean? We have the answers. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
I want to talk about a variety of different things, the first of which is about the stimulus package. I want to talk about the omnibus bill, which was paired into the stimulus package for argument's sake. I also want to speak about January 6th. What is actually going to be happening on January 6th? A lot of people are going to be in Washington, D.C. A lot of people are traveling from across the country to be there. What is the significance of it? What is the power that Vice President Mike Pence has in this situation? I want to talk about Georgia, and I also want to talk about who exactly is fighting for our president at this moment. Is the president fighting alone? Is there any use in actually fighting right now? I want to talk about that and so much more. But let's start with the stimulus package. What is money? What is money? It's a pretty simple question, or it should be. However, it seems as if our mostly economically illiterate establishment politicians in Congress do not understand what money actually is. You see, President Trump correctly wanted to cut out the pork and cut out the waste and give people assistance straight to the people. I think that President Trump's political instincts are correct here. I might disagree with him on some of the economics of it, but President Trump had a much better negotiating position than that of the congressional leadership. But what is money? Well, money is a representation of value. It's that simple. Creating more money out of thin air does not give you more value. That should be a ridiculously obvious statement. Just like there are the laws of nature, there are the laws of economics. Now, mind you, Congress probably had good intentions in passing this multi-trillion dollar stimulus. But good intentions do not result into good public policy. So what is money? Money allows two problems that we find in the laws of economics to be solved. And there's other problems it solves as well. But it solves the double incidence of wants problem, and it solves the retention of value problem. The double incidence of wants problem is if I want something specific and money didn't exist, I would have to barter for that specific thing. And therefore, the person who had that specific thing would have to want the specific thing that I had. So let's pretend I did nothing but grew oranges. I was an orange farmer. And in order to go find a wheel, or I wanted to go buy a piece of land, that landowner had to want the specific product or that good or service that I was offering. Money is just a replacement for that. Money allows me to not have to find a specific buyer for the value that I bring to the market, just any buyer whatsoever. That's where you get the price system from. And then we have the retention of value problem. What if you deal with perishable goods? What if you deal with something that only has a finite window of value? Money solves that problem. Printing more money does not make more stuff appear. Again, seventh grade pre-algebra classes cover this. It's a pretty simple truth when it comes to economics. But here we have our Washington, D.C. political class creating, with no backing whatsoever, trillions of dollars with no goods or services being correlated to that. Now, it would be one thing if Congress wanted to do a massive infrastructure bill, a public works project. I would find probably some of it to be wasteful and some of it to not be stimulative, but at least when you have a public works project, there is some good or service that is being rendered. There's some form of investment. Remember, there's a difference between investment and spending. Just sending out checks to every single American without having a correlated good or services alongside of it means that inflation will ensue. So how all of a sudden do you get more goods and services? You open up the country. It's that simple. The greatest stimulus is not creating $2 trillion out of thin air. The greatest stimulus is not going to the Federal Reserve and moving digits over. The greatest stimulus is ending these draconian, backwards, one-size-fits-all medieval and, quite honestly, evil lockdowns. That's an actual stimulus. When you print more money without goods and services also correlating growth alongside of it, it just spreads the value of the goods and services among a larger number of dollars. Now, President Donald Trump's instincts are correct here. He is trying to channel the spirit of Milton Friedman. Milton Friedman, a free market economist and monetarist, actually said, let's get rid of all the pork and just give people money directly. I would vast prefer that over our massive, bloated welfare state. And that's the part that Milton Friedman talks about that people kind of forget, which is Milton Friedman wanted to get rid of the entire welfare industry and replace it with a form of direct cash payments. However, people say that now's the time for Washington, D.C. to step up and do something. They did the worst thing they could have possibly done. Instead of some form of investment, some sort of public works project or infrastructure, national Wi-Fi, they passed along a form of deficit spending, inflation-inducing stimulus, alongside a gargantuan omnibus bill. Now, to be fair to Congress, more fair than I think they deserve, the gargantuan omnibus bill was not the stimulus bill. And some people were conflating the two, but they were passed at the same time. To be easily descriptive, I will put them both in the same category. Here's some of the stuff that your tax dollars were spent on. But guess what? We don't even have the tax dollars to justify some of these expenditures. Tax revenues are down. We are borrowing money to spend $1.7 billion to Jordan. We borrowed money to send $2.4 billion to democracy programs. We borrowed money, your money, to send $3.4 billion to refugee assistance. We borrowed money to spend $4.4 billion to international disaster assistance. We borrowed money to send $3.3 billion for global health programs. We borrowed money to send $26.5 billion for bilateral economic assistance abroad. We borrowed money to send $12.3 billion in excess funding for Federal Emergency Management Agency. We borrowed money for $13 billion for clean energy initiatives. And what does it mean to actually borrow the money? We can't even find a lender. So we borrow it against ourselves, which is inflation tomorrow, devaluation of our currency. And yet we're just supposed to believe that it's time for Congress to do something. No, it's time for Congress to not subsidize the lockdowns. It's time for Congress to demand a swift reopening of the American economy, not paying states to stay recklessly and indefinitely closed. What are your favorite holiday traditions? Do you ever wonder where they came from? Revisiting the moments trapped on home movies is a great way to discover what traditions have stood the test of time. Now that Christmas is over, two big questions arise. How long should the tree stay up? And how can I stay connected with family between now and the next holiday? Start the new year off correctly. Give your aging home movies, photos, and film reels a modern update so that they're organized and easy to share with friends and family. Did you know that videotape recordings weren't made to stand the test of time? They'll start diminishing after 10 or 15 years. So there's this amazing thing called Legacy Box. With Legacy Box, you have all of that footage organized and preserved quickly and easily. The service is so shockingly simple. You use your kit to safely send the moments you want preserved. Their experienced team will create a digital collection by hand. And with their tracking system, you can follow every step of the process so you always know your original items are secure. Over the past decade, Legacy Box has helped more than 1 million families restore and protect irreplaceable moments from the past. So go to legacybox.com/Charlie to take advantage of this limited time offer and get 40% off. Go to legacybox.com/Charlie and save 40% off while supplies last. What Congress has decided to embark on is not something that actually helps working people. If you're serious about helping working people, the two greatest things you can do to help working people is to protect their currency and to look out for your fellow countryman's participation in the labor market, aka don't engage in mass immigration. Those are probably the two most important things. Don't devalue your currency and don't dilute the labor pool by endlessly and recklessly opening your borders. A good rule of thumb is any country that engages in mass immigration typically has some other fault lines that they are not addressing. It could be cultural, it could be economic. However, what Congress has decided to do here, and if Joe Biden becomes president of the United States on January 20th, one of the things that he'll decide that he's saying he's going to do is completely open the borders, and it's up to Republicans to hopefully fight them. But the question is, why is it that Democrats and congressional leaders seem so focused on creating more money out of thin air to do something that will not have a stimulative effect in our country? Why is it? It's because stimulus, the creation of fiat currency, does help certain people. It helps the ruling class. Wealthy people that have leveraged their entire life, they are going to do just fine because of this fiat currency intrusion into our economy. But as the currency becomes increasingly worth less and worthless, people that are dependent on paycheck to paycheck, that do not have massive asset pools to reallocate them to metallics or land, hedges, shorts, they are going to find themselves in a very difficult and troubling economic predicament, which is no wage growth whatsoever, a growing wage pool, a growing labor pool that will compete for their own labor, and a currency that is not worth what it used to be and prices going up, the worst possible combination. So Congress is doing this because they think it is politically popular. They want to show people that they're fighting for them. None of this actually helps normal people long term. Now, some of the PPP money, I'm sure, is going to help certain small businesses. That could have been its own relief bill. It could have been its own $200 billion relief bill, not a $1 trillion relief bill and a $1.3 trillion omnibus bill. The PPP money could have been designed as no interest loans payable back 18 or 24 months from now, partially forgiven, with different parameters. Instead, the massive albatross of fiat currency, with the country remaining locked down, is a death sentence for the strength of the U.S. dollar. Who would possibly want that? International corporations that are more interested in the depletion of the American dollar and a weak dollar and the rise of the Chinese Communist Party. That's who. So congressional leadership that voted and supported this, and by the way, President Trump did everything he possibly could to fight back against this, they know that this is not actually going to result in economic growth. And this is just another reason exactly why Congress should have the one bill, one subject rule, which my good friend Foster Freeze, who came on this program, talked about it. But that's far too simple for Congress, because Congress had a lot of backroom deals, lobbyist carve-outs for that bill in particular, for now what is law. And all of the sort of crony deals, all of the untold stories are now coming to a very big date in history, January 6. What's the significance of that date? And what can actually be done about it? On January 6, the Electoral College results go in front of the United States Congress. It is the last step of, quote-unquote, electing a president. Vice President Mike Pence is the Vice President of the United States, but he is the only member, according to the United States Constitution, that serves a role both in the executive branch and in the legislative branch, a leadership role in particular. He is both the Vice President of the United States and the President of the United States Senate. The Vice President of the United States oversees regular business in the U.S. Senate and also is a tie-breaking vote. If you remember, during the impeachment fight, Vice President Pence, the President of the Senate, actually oversaw the vote, the roll call vote. It was not Mitch McConnell. It was Mike Pence. So because of this, Mike Pence oversees the submission and the acceptance of these Electoral College results. Vice President Pence, constitutionally, likely has the power to challenge and push back against many of the irregularities and results from a lot of these states. A piece by Alexander Makris asks the question, who counts the votes of the presidential electors? Now, interestingly, some people have different legal opinions on this. Some people say that Mike Pence does not have the power like Thomas Jefferson did over the president of the Senate. But let's do a little bit of a history lesson. Back in the disputed election of 1800, Thomas Jefferson was vice president of the United States. He was president of the Senate. The 1800 presidential election was a contest between Jefferson, Aaron Burr, John Adams, Charles Pinckney, and John Jay. Jefferson was the current vice president, and so he was able to count the votes. And some historians would say he counted them in his own favor. In fact, according to the Virginia Law Review from 2004, I'm reading from a very good article put together by Joe Hoft, Thomas Jefferson counts himself into the presidency. This is from the Virginia Law Review from 2004. Quote, Thomas Jefferson was remarkably aggressive as president of the Senate. Georgia's certificate granting 4 electoral votes to Jefferson was constitutionally defective on its face, a deficiency that was announced on the floor of Congress and reported by leading newspapers of the day. To resolve all doubts, we have located, this is from the Virginia Law Review, the Georgia certificate in the National Archives, and it does indeed reveal striking constitutional irregularities. Nevertheless, Jefferson failed to pause before counting Georgia's 4 electoral votes into the Republican column, declaring the final vote as if nothing were amiss. Had Georgia's ballot been excluded, the vote count would have admitted all 5 candidates into a runoff in the House. Without the decisive use of power as the president of the Senate, Jefferson might never have become president of the United States. He's the author of the Declaration. He's on Mount Rushmore. And he became president, some would argue, only because he used his unilateral power as president of the Senate to open and count the presidential ballots in his favor. So on January 6th, Mike Pence oversees this entire process. I'm sure there are a lot of conversations happening internally between the president of the United States and Mike Pence. And Mike Pence is a friend of mine. Mike Pence is an awesome, loyal American patriot. He spoke at our Turning Point USA Student Action Summit. He has been phenomenally loyal to the president and to his shared objectives and aims. And so whatever Mike Pence does, I am sure it will be cleared and approved by President Trump himself. But theoretically, Vice President Mike Pence could decide to accept electoral votes from all but states that are in contention. Vice President Mike Pence could say that until more evidence is put forward towards the veracity of these results, Georgia, Arizona, Michigan, and Wisconsin are not going to be accepted here in the United States Senate. Now, the world would probably metaphorically and literally blow up. I think we all know that. Now, in addition to that, on January 6th, it is the constitutional deadline for members of the House and members of the Senate to object against the results. Congressman Mo Brooks, Congressman-elect Madison Cawthorn, Congressman Matt Gaetz, amongst others, I think Congressman Louis Gohmert as well, have already pledged to object to the Electoral College vote tabulation in the House of Representatives. We do not know as of today whether or not a member of the United States Senate will do that. Now, a singular objection will bring the results into a couple-hour debate in both the House and the Senate. Then there will be a roll call vote, which will determine whether or not each body accepts the Electoral College results. Now, the question that I have not had answered yet is, in the United States Senate, will it require a 60-vote threshold or a 51-vote threshold? Some people are saying 51 votes. I'm not so sure that would be the probably Senate majority leader that would set that rule. So if Pence just follows the U.S. Constitution and does this in coordination with the President of the United States, very well some of these Electoral College results could be rejected. Now, I'm not going to get into the probability of that. I'm not going to get into which way I think it'll actually land. And by the way, tons of people are planning to go to Washington, D.C. on January 6th. I think a more appropriate way to approach this and think about this is with a thought exercise and is with a question. What if Republicans were under accusations of having developmentally disabled people vote against their will for a candidate that they didn't choose? What if it was Republicans that had evidence against them that showed the Nevada Native Project trading ballots for cash? What if it was Republicans that all of a sudden found boxes of ballots underneath tables in the middle of the night to correlate certain vote drops to benefit a certain candidate? What if it was Republicans that won thanks to a 1,774% voter registration increase in Pennsylvania for 90-plus-year-olds in the midst of a pandemic? What if it was Republicans that were the ones that were defending the idea that certain national trends are to be ignored, but four counties where everything mattered is where they were really benefited from? Would Democrats use every single constitutional power at their disposal? Would Democrats use the president of the Senate? Joe Biden is worried about this, and I could prove it, because Joe Biden, when he gave his pseudo rub in your face unity speech a couple weeks ago, he said, "And when I was president of the Senate, I did my job and I oversaw results that were against my wishes." Joe Biden only said that because he's worried that there could be a potential constitutional issue in the United States Senate. All of this is happening alongside Congressman Louis Gohmert suing the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence, demanding that he does more to prevent the certification of these results. Would Democrats fight in this moment? Would Democrats refuse to certify the election results if it meant four more years for someone that they didn't like and they believed that they saw ample voter fraud evidence? What would the Democrats do? Senate Republicans are signaling that they are not even going to take it up. In fact, Senator Mitch McConnell is sending out warnings to people saying, do not do this. Do not take up this vote. Don't do this in this moment. We know the House of Representatives will go into a debate. We know all of this. And so I guess my bigger question is, for Republicans that refuse to fight in this moment, why would they think for a second that the 70 million people that believe this election was stolen are going to have respect for them, are going to support them, and are going to believe that our elections have any form of integrity? What leads them to believe that? There is a growing undercurrent in conservative circles of people whispering and saying, move on. Cut it out. Turn the page. Fight another day. I hear it a lot. I'm hearing it from all over. As if we should not exhaust every single constitutional action. There's so much wrong with that argument. There's so much danger in that. But more than anything else, why wouldn't you fight with everything that you have at the moment where our entire republic could very well be decided? Look, as I'm recording this episode right now, I'm using a very important product. Listen carefully. It's called ExpressVPN. They anonymize your data. You can surf the internet freely without wondering who's getting a hold of your search history or viewing habits or what they will do with that information. Do you want the government to be reading over your shoulder every time you go online? There's never been a more important time to protect your internet activity. That's why I urge you to get ExpressVPN. When you search for something online, watch a video, or click a link, it all gets tracked by big tech companies. They match your activity to your true identity using your device's unique IP address. When I use ExpressVPN, these companies can't see my IP address at all. My identity is anonymized by a secure VPN server, and my data is encrypted for maximum protection. And besides hiding my internet activity, what I like most about ExpressVPN is how easy it is to use. Just download the app on your phone or computer, tap one button, and you're protected. So stop handing over your data willingly. Go to expressvpn.com/Charlie. That's ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. Go to expressvpn.com/Charlie right now to learn more. I want to get to some sound here. One of my favorite pundits, one of my favorite people, Mark Stein. Let's go to cut five.
But it's a sad comment on our world that so many people are so dissatisfied with their own heritage. Next thing you know, there'll be a half Indian, half Jamaican raised in Montreal claiming to have celebrated Kwanzaa all through her childhood. Full disclosure, I was actually raised in Topeka, Kansas, and if this show went on another 15 minutes, I wouldn't be able to keep up this unconvincing accent.
What was he talking about? Well, Kamala Harris had a Kwanzaa message saying how she celebrated with her family growing up, which I believe Kwanzaa officially became a holiday after she was born. Play tape, cut four.
Happy holidays, everyone. I wanted to take a moment to send my warmest wishes to everyone celebrating Kwanzaa. You know, my sister and I, we grew up celebrating Kwanzaa. Every year, our family would, and our extended family, we would gather around across multiple generations, and we'd tell stories. The kids would sit on the carpet, and the elders would sit in chairs, and we would light the candles, and of course, afterwards, have a beautiful meal. So to everyone who is celebrating, happy Kwanzaa from our family to yours.
Did you hear that entire diatribe? That alone is a reason to go contest the election results on January 6th. I have no other arguments. Just Kamala Harris's Kwanzaa message is the reason why we should fight like we've never fought before on January 6th. And I wish I was kidding. The pandering left-wing elites have gone far beyond what decent and normal Americans would interpret as acceptable. I'm not going to get into the specifics of the Kamala Harris issue. Mark Stein did it for us. But the bigger question is this, is you really want those people to be in charge? And maybe they will be. Maybe they'll be in charge of, maybe she'll be the president of the Senate in 25 days. Might happen. But the grassroots of our country, grassroots conservatives, and here's the message to establishment Republicans. They're not going to forget this moment. They're not going to forget the people that rolled over and did nothing. I have never seen so much outright rage and anger as I see right now. Let's play cut 10, please.
In totality, this is someone who should never be a candidate for the United States Senate. And John Ossoff as well, 83% of his donations from out of the state of Georgia, hiding donations from a Chinese media-run company. These are people who are compromised by China. We can't have another Eric Swalwell. Therefore, we cannot have John Ossoff. This is next-level leftism. It's all out there. This is another AOC, and perhaps even worse than AOC, if that's even possible.
Worse than AOC, and that John Ossoff is compromised by China, which is absolutely true, which is those people will be in office regardless of what happens on January 6th if we do not do our job in Georgia just the day prior. And President Trump is doing a rally in Georgia on January 4th, the day before the Georgia runoff. I could tell you that grassroots conservatives, patriotic Americans, are taking note. They're taking notice, and they will not forget. They want to know who is willing to stand and fight in these perilous times. Who is putting something at risk? Who is putting themselves on the line? And who's just rolling over and waiting for things to move on? Thanks so much for listening, everybody. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, where we play offense with a sense of urgency to win America's culture war, go to tpusa.com. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. And if you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Make sure to listen to our sister episode as well today. God bless.